for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded? Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to our program, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border. It's Constitution Day. Actually, I think legally it's tomorrow, but it's celebrated today. The day that our schools are mandated to teach about the Constitution. Wouldn't that be nice? What about Constitution year? How about every year? Anyhow, welcome to the program. Tom Hartman here with you. It's the first hour of the last program of the week. Of our last day of the week, and therefore, it is time for our Brunch with Bernie segment. We always have Congressman Bernie Sanders on. Congressman Bernie Sanders, reelected 7 times to the House of Representatives from the state of Vermont, the only member of the House of Representatives who is neither Democrat nor Republican, but an independent, and the longest-serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives. I like to think of him as America's Congressman. And Bernie Sanders, his website, house.bernie.gov, or Bernie.org. Congressman Bernie Sanders, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you here, Bernie. Last night, the president gave a speech trying to polish his image and point our attention away from the specific failures of his administration, in my opinion, and laying out all these things that we're going to do. He was starting to sound like Lyndon Johnson at one point in there. what's your take on it?
Well, I think you're absolutely right. What the Republican plan has been in Congress and through the White House for the last week to deflect attention away from the disastrous role that FEMA and the Bush administration played in Hurricane Katrina. Yesterday, as a matter of fact, I'm on the Government Reform Committee, which theoretically has the role of oversight, which, in other words, is supposed to be telling the American people what's going on with government, what's going on that's wrong, and in fact has been doing a terrible, terrible job skirting over and ignoring some of the major failures of the Bush administration. But yesterday, for the first hearing that we had on Hurricane Katrina, guess who we heard from? Do you think we heard from Michael Brown? Do you think we heard from some of the other people who have left FEMA? Do you think we heard from anybody in the Bush administration?
Or Chertoff?
No. Needless to say, we didn't hear a word from these guys. They weren't there. What we heard was from city officials from all across America, from Washington, from Miami, from elsewhere. The attempt right now on the part of the Bush administration is to deflect attention away from Washington back to the cities to suggest subtly or not so subtly that the real problem here was that state government Louisiana, city government Louisiana, don't blame the Bush administration. The other thing that we're seeing now, and the president, of course, gave his speech yesterday, is rebuilding New Orleans is going to cost a heck of a lot of money. It's going to drive up the deficit. What amazes me is that in the midst of all of this, we have a $8 trillion national debt, significantly caused already by huge tax breaks to millionaires and billionaires. But in the midst of all of the new spending that we're seeing for Hurricane Katrina, for the war in Iraq, I have not heard one word from the Bush administration saying, gee, maybe we'd better rethink repealing the estate tax and providing hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks, which go exclusively 100% to the wealthiest 2% of the population. Not one word about that. So while taxpayers are going to be asked to pay, appropriately enough, for the rebuilding of the Gulf Coast, the president still and his Republican friends still want to continue the outpouring of tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires.
So the people who are actually going to pay for the rebuilding of the Gulf Coast are not really today's taxpayers. They're our children and grandchildren, those taxpayers.
Tom, we have an $8 trillion national debt, which, of course, will be substantially paid off by our kids and grandchildren. As you mentioned, that's $26,000 for every man, woman, and child in this country. So at a time when the government is spending huge sums on Katrina, on Iraq, when the deficit is going to get higher, national debt will get higher, these people still want to give what will amount to almost $1 trillion in tax breaks through the repeal of the estate tax over a 20-year period. Can one believe that? Talk about fiscal irresponsibility. I mean, conservatives, remember the old mantra of conservatives was, we got to treat the people's money like it was our own. To burden the kids and our grandchildren, middle-income people, low-income people, to subsidize tax breaks for billionaires is beyond comprehension.
And at the same time, for average working people, while they're not getting a tax break, we are getting hit with a bit of an increase in the cost of living via increased fuel prices and increased heating prices.
Now, isn't it interesting? I mean, just how Bush sees the role of government. He acted very decisively in terms of implementing policy in Hurricane Katrina by saying that they're going to do away with a prevailing wage, that is the wage that workers receive in the Louisiana area, which is already quite low, by the way, by national standards. They're going to lower that so that employers there can pay people even less than they're being paid, they were being paid previously. Here is decisive leadership to lower wages for American workers. And yet all over America, in the state of Vermont, all over America, people are paying $3 a gallon for gas. They're paying $3.15 per gallon of gas. Meanwhile, the refineries are coming back online. Why are we paying so much gas? Don't you think a strong president would bring in his friends from the energy companies, from the oil companies, and say, hey, guys, you people are enjoying record-breaking profits before Hurricane Katrina. Stop ripping off the American people. We're going to fine you. We're going to impose a windfall profits tax on you. We're going to deal with you.
Well, maybe he has brought in his friends. ExxonMobil in the last quarter just showed the most profitable quarter for any company in the history of the United States, $10 billion. I mean, it's not just the most profitable oil company. It's not just the most profitable company in the history of oil. It's the most profitable company in the history of the United States. And what boggles my mind, Bernie, is that the news media, you know, this is reported in the business news as, hey, if you're an Exxon stockholder, you're in good shape, but nobody else is talking about this.
You're absolutely right, Tom. I mean, that is absolutely true. People say, gee, why are oil prices? This is before Katrina. Why were they going up? And making the connection between the huge profits of the oil industry and high gas prices is not something that the media did. But in any case, just looking at how Bush acts, how these people act, their greed is so much a part of them, they literally can't think outside of it. Crisis in New Orleans, an opportunity to lower wages for American workers. Crisis for millions and millions of people who can't afford $3 a gallon for gas. Nothing. No leadership. No leadership whatsoever. So, that is an issue that some of us in Congress are going to be working on. We're demanding, and we'll see how much luck we have with the Bush administration, an investigation on the part of the Attorney General with regard to price fixing, all the way from the oil companies down to the gas stations.
Well, there is some leadership, by the way, on the issue that has to do with the whole thing about ExxonMobil and these other gas companies being so profitable, and that is that Bush's last tax cut, if you were a billionaire, millionaire, if you're a person who made your living sitting on your butt around the pool waiting for the dividend check to arrive, they reduced your income tax from the rate that people like you and me who get a paycheck pay down to a maximum of 15%. And now they're pushing to reduce that to zero.
I mean, it's almost, for these guys, you almost have to look at them like heroin addicts who can't control themselves. Their soul, their essence, is so filled with greed that every time that there is an opportunity to make the rich richer, they instinctively move forward. They literally cannot control themselves. And meanwhile, on another subject that the Congress voted on just yesterday, an investigation into what went wrong with Hurricane Katrina. Many of us wanted to see a 9/11 type commission, independent, nonpartisan, take a hard look at what went on, not only to ascertain blame or concern about Katrina, but to look to the future. Thomas Kean, as you may remember, was a former Republican governor of New Jersey and was the chairman of the 9/11 Commission, and most people think he did a damn good job. He says, he looks at what happened in Hurricane Katrina, he says, they learned nothing. The same problems that we had with command and control, the same problems we had with the ability of police and fire to communicate with each other, problems that we had in 9/11 are still there. So the American people who have spent billions of dollars on homeland security want to know, if God forbid there is another terrorist attack and we need some serious emergency management, is the United States government capable of doing it If not, why? And how do we move forward to protect the American people? That's what we want to see. So meanwhile, and I think most people say, sure, let's have an independent, nonpartisan commission looking at this thing. The president says no. The Republican leadership says no. We're going to have a partisan Republican-led committee.
Yeah, Tom DeLay is going to investigate Tom DeLay. Denny Hastert is going to investigate Denny Hastert. Right. George Bush going to investigate George Bush.
There you go.
It's pretty grim. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Your calls, 866-889-8894. Coming up next, it's the Tom Hartman radio program, and 17 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Just take what you need. Don't empty out this book.
And welcome back, my friends. 21 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Tom Hartman radio program, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Our telephone number, 866-889-8894. Wayne in Seattle, Washington on the line. Hey, Wayne, you're live with Congressman Sanders.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Bernie.
Hi, Wayne.
First of all, I really want to commend you, Congressman Sanders, for taking questions live. I listen to a lot of radio, and whenever some of these radio talk show hosts have congresspeople as guests, they're invariably too busy to take calls. And I guess they have, you know, lunch dates with lobbyists that they have to rush off to or something. But it's very rare. I don't know if you realize how rare it is for congresspeople to take live questions. And I'm even noticing that their coffee clutches with their constituents are also becoming more rare.
Thank you for saying that. And I'll tell you what I think. I think one of the crises in America is that the people really know very, very little about what goes on in Washington. I think the media does a horrendous job, and it's terribly important that we do all that we can. People may agree or disagree, but people have got to know what is going on in their nation's capital. So what's your question, Wayne?
Well, I really want to – I'm surprised that more Democrats don't hit the issue of economic inequality, wealth gap, and you're one of the few people I've seen confront Alan Greenspan on this. And I have a couple of my own theories. First of all, I think that they're just afraid of being accused of class warfare. The war's already started, though. Or maybe they're just so many of them are themselves independently wealthy or their contributors are independently wealthy that they're afraid to upset that apple cart. But I think it's a real powerful issue that strikes right at the fundamental fairness of the American people. And I have a quick follow-up, too, but I'd like to get your theory.
Well, Wayne, you ask a very, very important question. And I think you've given some of the reasons why the issue of income inequality and wealth inequality is not talked about. Number one, money plays such a huge role in Washington in terms of both political parties having to go out to very wealthy people in order to get support. Many members of Congress have got to be on the phone day after day, and yet most of the money comes to these guys from very wealthy people, and you don't want to, you know, burn the hand that feeds you. But I think that story, the fact that the middle class is collapsing, poverty is increasing, and the gap between the rich and the poor is growing wider, that we have the most unfair distribution of wealth by far of any major industrialized country, and that the rich increasingly have so much power over our economy, over our media, over our politics, that is the story that has to be talked about day after day. Because if you're not talking about that, you're really not explaining to the American people why things are happening.
And yet increasingly the media is the rich.
That is exactly right. The media is not some kind of referee there giving us an objective analysis of what's going on. They are very clearly part of the problem, owned themselves, of course, by large multinational corporations who choose to ignore huge issues that affect the middle class and working families. Not at all.
Yeah. Ron in Runton, Washington, you're live with Congressman Sanders.
Yes, I just, you know, when he's talking about $26,000 in debt, that's just the budget now, right?
That's the $8 trillion national debt.
Right, but if you project that out, it gets much larger.
Well, over the years, it will grow.
If you look at over the period of that next generation's lifetime, their debt's going to be far, higher than that.
Unless we do something to lower that national debt.
Right, right. I mean, you're looking at, you know, almost like $1 million mortgages.
That's exactly right. And the result of that will mean, years to come, there will not be funding to provide for the basic services that the American people require. What will happen is that there will be cuts in federal programming, in health care programming, in housing program, in veterans' needs. There will be a shift back to the local communities and to the states where taxes will go up on middle-class Americans. Bottom line, to my mind, is that you can't give tax breaks at the federal level to billionaires and pass that bill on to our kids and grandchildren and to the middle class. To give tax breaks to the rich and raise taxes for the middle class is the Robin Hood principle in reverse, and it is not acceptable.
Rick in Grand Rapids, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Yes, good day, gentlemen. Bernie, I think that now with this Hurricane Katrina, everyone will want to send relief down there to the Gulf states. And some conservative Republicans, I've heard them say, well, you know, why should we as a country take care of that state or this state? You know, it's their problem. But the reality, of course, is that, and I watch C-SPAN a lot, this will be a situation where they don't raise taxes to cover for it. They won't shift it out of another program. They'll probably call it something like an emergency supplemental, and they'll put it off budget or something. And so they play all these accounting games, and people think, oh, gee, we're helping other people. Our taxes aren't going up, and everything's hunky-dory. But the reality is the deficit keeps getting larger, doesn't it?
That's right. Well, that's the point that I made earlier. If we're going to spend a couple of $100 billion, that's real money. And whether you put it into a supplemental or wherever you do it, this is money that eventually is going to be paid off by the American people. In my view, and I said several times right now, at a time when the rich are getting richer and the middle class is shrinking, it is not acceptable to give more tax breaks to the wealthy. In fact, we have to rethink the tax breaks that were given them recently. The middle class alone should not have to pay for the rebuilding of Louisiana.
Yeah, it's the old saying, I'd gladly pay the taxes I paid under Bill Clinton if I could have the economy I had under Bill Clinton. It's just rolling back Georgia's tax breaks. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, our Brunch with Bernie segment. 27 and a half minutes past the hour.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
They sell us the president the same way. They sell us our clothes and our cars. They sell us everything from youth to religion. The same time they sell us our wars.
You tell him, Jackson Brown.
I want to know who the men in the shadows are. I want to hear somebody asking them why. They can be counted on to tell us who our enemies are, but they're never the ones to fight or to die, and they're alive in the balance.
And welcome back, my friends. 34 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. It's the Brunch with Bernie segment here on the Tom Hartman program. Talk radio for the rest of us. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us, the only independent member of the House of Representatives. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. Across the United States, outside the United States, 503-248-0620. And Matt in Kansas on the line. Hey, Matt, you're live with Congressman Sanders.
Good morning, Tom. Bernie, would you... Would you feel that it is a good idea for each of us to call our senators and representatives and express our displeasure over the repeal of the Davis-Bacon Act?
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is part of the war against working people that these people in the White House and Republican leadership have been waging. It is imperative that the American people say, no way. Here you have a part of the country where, A, poverty levels are very, very high. Wages are low. There's desperation now as a result of all of the destruction. And instead of paying people decent wages, they're trying to lower those wages. That is unacceptable. And D, let me tell you something. If they pull this thing off in the Gulf Coast, don't think that that concept is not going to spread all over America, which will result in lower wages for millions of American workers. So, yes, get on the phone, call up your senators, call up your congresspeople.
And with all due respect to you, Bernie, the toll-free telephone number, it's an unpublished toll-free number, but you can call. This is the Capitol switchboard. It's the old Senate office building number. It is toll-free all across the United States. Simply ask for your member of Congress. If you don't know it, give them your zip code or ask for your senator. Tell them your state. They'll tell you who your two senators are. It's 1-877-SOB, the letter U, S-O-B, as in Senate Office Building, United States Senate Office Building, toll-free all across the United States. Daryl in Kansas on the line. Hey, it's Kansas Day. Hey, Daryl, what's up?
Hey, good. How appropriate that that number is USLB, huh?
Well, you know, there's a few good people in Congress, and we're talking with one of them right now.
You're exactly right. My question is, as a former resident of Cleveland during the debacle of 2004, I'm pretty concerned that HAVA really didn't do what it was supposed to do last time around. How can we ensure that Diebold, ESS, the Republicans, and the wealthy aren't controlling the voting booths and our votes being counted?
Well, you raise a very important question, and it goes without saying that if we're not absolutely confident that every vote cast in America is accurately counted, then we're not living in a democracy. For a start, some of us are working in Washington on legislation that would make sure that there is a paper trail for every touchscreen ballot in America. Second of all, we can put pressure on our secretaries of states and our governors to make sure that that happens as well. That's a very important issue.
I'd like to just, if I may, lobby you for a moment here, Bernie. I'd just like to toss in one last thing, and that is that, in my opinion, for what it's worth, the vote is the most important of all the commons. It's more important than the national parks or the police or the fire or whatever. It is
the
most important.
It's the essence of democracy.
That's right.
Without confidence in the vote, we don't live in a democracy.
Right. And
And
because it's the most important of all the commons, it is the absolute one part of the commons for which there should be no privatization whatsoever.
Absolutely. You don't have to lobby me too hard.
Okay. And I think, you know, just saying let's get paper trails on Diebold machines, it's still we've privatized our vote to Diebold. So I think that all of these machines should be owned by government agencies. The software should be
Absolutely.
Open source. It should be programmed by government programmers, and anybody should be able to inspect it.
And when you have companies like Diebold claiming proprietary rights, that is clearly unacceptable.
Yeah, okay, good. We're thinking the same way. Dave in Eureka, California on the line. Hey, Dave.
Gentlemen, you're both calling it like it is today, and you're on my subject. I have, as you know, long been convinced that the only reason that we have these greedy con artists in power is because of rigged elections, primarily these trick voting machines. And I do know that you've been trying, Bernie, and some of your colleagues, John Conyers, Russ Holt, to do what you can to try to make these machines honest and verifiable. I'd love to see it if you can, as only you really can, like you can take on Dennis Hassard, DeLay, confront them, humiliate them for blocking all efforts to make these machines verifiable. If they do it to us again, I don't see any of you being able to pull this country out through it.
Okay.
Bernie?
Well, thanks. I mean, this is an issue very high on my priority list, because as we just said a moment ago, if people are not confident that when they cast the ballot, that vote is accurately counted, you're not talking about living in a real democracy. So it is a huge issue that we've
Dennis in Mattoon, Illinois. You're live with Bernie Sanders.
Glad to be with you, too. Congressman, bless you. You understand what the public and public service means.
Thank you very much, Dennis.
And about our other public servant, the gentleman who had to get a clue about what a public service is, our dear Vice President. I heard stories last night on MSNBC that he diverted resources to guard pipelines. Well, they could have been helping people with the other things to prepare for this catastrophe.
Are you familiar with this story, Bernie?
No, actually,
this just came out yesterday afternoon, and it was not widely reported, but it is. We have verified it. The Vice President's office called one of the electric utilities down in the southeast in the area that was hit by the hurricane, and ordered them to redirect power to an oil company and to an oil pipeline, and shut down two hospitals for 24 hours in order to do so.
Is that right?
Yeah,
I heard that.
And that's what Dennis is talking about.
I mean, that's an
outrage. It was a direct call from the Vice President's office.
If that's true, that's an outrage. And second of all, I don't know where the Vice President thinks he has the authority to do that.
Well,
all the Vice President constitutionally has is just wait till the other guy dies.
Right, or cast a deciding vote in the Senate. Yeah, he's the President of the Senate. And in fact, the guy, the quote in the newspaper from the oil company guy, or from the power plant guy, was that he felt that it was a presidential order. He was under the impression that he had a presidential order, that he had to redirect that power to the oil company and away from the hospitals.
I will check that one out.
Okay.
Thank you.
Jeff in Maryville, Indiana, you're live with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Bernie. I'm the guy called last week that owns his own company. And, you know, I own a freight company. As a matter of fact, I'm doing what George Bush didn't do. I had a fire guy today, so I'm driving one of the trucks, one of my trucks. But at any rate, when I charge freight charges to my customers, the amount of tax that I pay is incorporated into what do I charge.
Mm-hmm.
So in reality, the little man not only pays the taxes out of his income, he pays taxes for everything he buys.
Mm-hmm.
I never understood why they tax small business in this country, because we just incorporate that tax into the product or the service that we sell.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and I just don't understand that. I never have.
Well, okay, I'm sorry. Well, the issue here, I mean, now is, I don't know that we have the time to get into the whole discussion about taxation. In my view, what fair taxation is about is simply asking those people who have more income and more wealth to pay their taxes at a higher percentage than people who don't have a lot of money. And I've always believed that the most direct and effective way of doing that is through a progressive income tax and through a tax on wealth. That is the simplest and fairest way to do that. And I know you and I talked about this estate tax last week. Is that right?
Yeah, I'm sorry, Jeff is gone now, but
Jeff
yes,
gone,
yes
yeah.
Yeah, you did.
And you know, my view is that, of course, we have to keep the estate tax, which is a tax on the very, very wealthiest people in this country, because if the very wealthiest people are not paying their fair taxes, then it's going to be the middle class, the working people who are, and they can afford it much less.
But the point that Jeff is making, he's echoing one of the right-wing talking points, and one of the big ones that the Heritage Foundation and the Cato Institute now are pushing really hard, which is when a company pays taxes, they consider that a cost of doing business, and they add that to the price of the product. In fact, in many cases, they don't add it to the price of the product. They reduce profit by that amount, number one. And number two, the larger issue is that corporations, just like human beings, use the commons. His trucking company, for example, is using the public roads. His trucking company is using the court system. His trucking company is using the currency system, the Treasury Department. His trucking company is using an educated workforce paid for all by all of us. And it exists. He's able to make the profits he's able to make so that he can worry about an estate tax because of this commons, of all of these things. And yet the cons are saying, but we shouldn't have to pay for any of that. We should let just the average person
pay
for all
of it. As I think many of your listeners know, there are a lot of right-wing think tanks funded by large corporations and very wealthy people who hire these intellectuals to come up with ideas as to why the rich should pay less and why workers should see a decline in their standard of living, and that's what we're seeing here.
Yeah. Richard in Mingo Junction, Ohio. Hey, Richard.
Hey, how you doing, Tom? How you doing, Congressman Bernie?
Good. How are you,
Richard? I listened real good to that speech last night. And I knew he wasn't real serious about anything when he never mentioned a repeal or a delay of the bankruptcy law. Now, these people who are losing everything are still going to have to pay bills, things
like
charge, mortgages, and so forth. Can't we get something started in Congress, maybe to at least temporarily delay it?
Richard, you gave my speech yesterday that I gave in a committee hearing just the other day in the Financial Services Committee. You're absolutely right.
If
people don't have any money, if they have lost everything, what happens when they're going to be late paying their mortgages? What's going to happen when they're late paying their credit cards and so forth and so on? Are they going to be punished even more as a result of the disaster? And the answer is they should not be. And you're right that the president somehow forgot to mention that.
Somehow.
Don't know why. He was too busy trying to repeal the prevailing wage in Louisiana to remember what happens to thousands of people who are unable to pay their bills.
Very quickly, Bernie, do you think there's any chance that there'll be anything going through Congress to suspend the Bankruptcy Act for a short while for these folks?
We will try.
You'll try. Okay, good on you. We're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment on the Tom Hartman Program, the first segment of the last hour of the week. Every single week has been for the last, a year and a half or more. It's the 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. 9.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Our program brought to you today by Motor Silk, 1-866-LESS-FUEL, or evergreenamerica.com. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Talk radio for the rest of us. Our Brunch with Bernie segment, Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. And 1-866, I believe I mentioned that, 889-8894, telephone number. Eric in West Virginia on the line. Hey, Eric, you're live with Congressman Sanders.
Hi, Congressman Sanders.
And hi, Eric.
Thanks for having him on the show. It sounds like, you know, Bernie talks for all of us, and it just seems that the hard part about it is he seems like the only voice of reason. You know, it's wonderful to hear him, but where's the rest of them? Now, my question, or maybe a little statement, is this repeal of the Davis-Bacon Act is really vulgar, and I can't believe that the newspapers aren't hammering on it like the previous caller said, that maybe big business controls what we hear. But let me ask you one thing. What's with the young kids of today? Well, I went to college in the late 60s, early 70s, and we were politically savvy, and we had a movement going on. Is there college movements now, or are they just oblivious to this? And how can we motivate the young people to get on board?
Well, Eric, that's a great question, because there's not going to be a future for this country unless young people are involved politically. I think there is some pretty good news out there, and that is that after a long period when voter turnout was very low among young people, that seems to be improving. I think there is more consciousness on college campuses, but there's no question but that we have a long, long way to go. So it's an issue that some of us are working on. We're making some progress, but a lot more work has got to be done.
1-866-889-8894. Scott in Richmond, Virginia. You're live with Congressman Sanders.
Hi, Congressman and Tom. Adding to the last caller, I've been furious since I heard about the stealth repeal of Davis-Bacon, and I wondered where are liberals and independents in Congress? This is like a gimme item. They could make such an issue of this. It's so unfair.
Scott, on many issues, including this one, there are a number of us who are standing up and trying to fight back. There is a lot that goes on in Congress from many of us that you don't hear about. It's just stuff that's not covered by the media. You can have press conferences, send out press
conferences. People need to hear.
Well, it's sometimes hard to get it out. But what I do want to tell you is there is outrage among many, many of the progressives, all of the progressives, about doing away with prevailing wage. We know that this is just another attack on the middle class and working families. But what these guys do all of the time, whenever there's a disaster, they go to their back pocket, they pick out their agenda that they had on the table, they had in their back pocket for years and years, and then they throw it out in the middle of a crisis. So what they want to do, clearly, is wipe out Davis-Bacon all over America, lower the wages of the American workers. They're starting off in the Gulf Coast. Many of us are doing what we can to fight it. You don't hear about it because, for whatever reason, the TV stations and the radio stations are not going to talk about it.
Thurman in Nebraska, you're live with Bernie Sanders.
Am I on?
You are on.
Okay. Well, my concern is that even when we get these bums out of office, I mean, they have no real incentive to represent me. Because as long as they represent corporate interests, they're going to have a job once they get out, even if, for some fluke of nature, despite all the machines and everything, they lose an election, they just go right back and end up making even more money for doing the corporate agenda. So I don't know what the answer is. I had an idea of if you're going to donate to a political campaign, you have to have a birth certificate. But
As opposed to being a corporation, you mean?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, there are a couple of issues here. Number one, the point about the revolving door is absolutely correct. There's a fellow named Billy Towson, and Billy was the chairman of the House Commerce Committee that wrote the disastrous Medicare prescription drug bill for the pharmaceutical industry. Well, it won't shock too many of the listeners to know that after Billy resigned from Congress, lo and behold, he's now working for the pharmaceutical industry. And that kind of stuff does, in fact, happen all of the time. I think to get at the root of money in politics, what we need is radical changes in campaign financing. I think we need to go to public funding of elections, limit the amount of money that candidates can spend, so that what we really do have is a debate about ideas,
where people are coming from rather than spending zillions of dollars on negative 30-second TV ads. And I think if you had a level playing field, if you had public funding, I think you'd probably get a new breed of people in Washington who are concerned about representing ordinary folks rather than large corporations and the wealthy.
As they've succeeded in doing in Maine and Arizona.
We've had some progress in Vermont a little bit as well.
Yeah. Maureen in Seattle, Washington. Maureen, you're live with Congressman Sanders.
Oh, hi. Thank you very much. First of all, Tom, I just love your show and all that you do. I'm so appreciative.
Thank you.
And Congressman Sanders, I'm so grateful to be hearing you speak. One of the things on my mind has to do with the fact that the media is so owned today by corporations. How do we as citizens, in addition to sending letters to the editor, for instance, for papers or making calls, what else can we do to say enough is enough?
Maureen, thank you. That is a very, very important question, and you're absolutely right. Stop and think about some of the most significant issues that that affect working people. I mean, that is the decline of the middle class, the growing gap between the rich and the poor, the loss of good-paying jobs because of our disastrous trade policy, the fact that we're the only country in the world without a national health care program. Think how often, how rarely, I should say, the media covers those issues. I think, Marie, the answer is that people have got to be involved politically in a different way than they have in the past. For example, while it is unusual, the time is long overdue for you, perhaps, and all over this country, people to get together, drop in on their publisher and say, hey, we are not happy with the nature of your reporting. Put these columnists in. We don't want to see just right-wing columnists. We want a different type of coverage. That's called political action at the local level.
There you go. Working the refs.
Yes.
Congressman Bernie Sanders, our weekly national town hall meeting. Congressman Sanders, Bernie.org or House.Bernie.gov for more information. Bernie, thanks so much for being with us again.
Good to be with you, Tom.
We'll see you next week. And have a good one. It's the Tom Hartman radio program where progressives fiendishly plot for total world domination. Yep, nothing less. We learned that from the Project for New American Century.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Only we'll do it right.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from California to West Virginia. Beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite system, streaming around the planet on RadioPower.org, WhiteRoseSociety.org, and in cable systems in 29 states on CRN Digital. Welcome back to our program. Ivan Osorio is with the Competitive Enterprise Institute. He's the editorial director of the Competitive Enterprise Institute, a, what would you say, corporate-friendly think tank, Ivan?
Free market.
Free market. That's a good phrase. His writings focus on labor issues in the new economy. We've seen the Davis-Bacon Act now suspended by George W. Bush in the area hit by the hurricane. This is a law passed under a Republican president by a Republican House and a Republican Senate in 1931 that said essentially that if federal money is coming into an area, it shouldn't be causing perturbations or dislocations in the local job market, and therefore anybody who's hired with that federal money has to be paid the prevailing wage. You think that's a bad idea? In fact, you think even a minimum wage is a bad idea. Am I not correct?
Well, it was passed by, as you said correctly, a Republican administration, President Herbert Hoover, and basically what the act says is basically that the prevailing wage has actually been defined as the union wage.
Hang on just a second. The union wage, you know, there are union workers in Louisiana who are making $15, $20 an hour, but the prevailing wage, the federal prevailing wage in Louisiana is $9 an hour.
Yeah. But traditionally, since 1935, which is when the act was amended, the Department of Labor has set the prevailing wage for different areas of the country.
Right.
And the biggest problem to me is the process whereby this is done, which is basically, we have a central bureaucracy in Washington determining what wages should be, rather than which is a fairly heavy-handed, market intervention.
So you would rather have wages be defined by employers, period.
Well, and employees too. I mean, employees don't have to take any jobs, and the problem.
So they have the choice of starving, and therefore they should just work it out. You can starve, or you can work for this wage.
Well, you can look for another job.
Well, that's assuming that there's more jobs than there are employees. We haven't had that situation in the United States since the late 1940s.
Well, and one reason for that is the Davis-Bacon Act. Because what the Davis-Bacon Act did when it was enacted was it really cut off the whole series of jobs, which is basically such as helpers and apprentices. Because it doesn't, the Davis-Bacon Act, when it defined the prevailing wage, it made no distinction for the level of skill. And what you have in New Orleans now, you have a lot of the people who are mostly affected are people who are in the inner city, who are poor, and who are very low or unskilled. And basically, for a contractor to find hiring these people economical, they basically may have to hire them at a lower wage so they can gain the skills and then go on. I mean,
so you think that $9 an hour is too much to pay somebody to do cleanup work?
Well, how many people can you pay at that rate?
Well, I don't know. I mean, there's a larger question here, Ivan Osorio, which is to what extent is the purpose of an economy to serve the community, or is the purpose of the community to serve those who have the greatest power in the economy? And it seems to me like you're coming down on the side of the purpose of the community is to provide service for the owners of the economy, the CEOs of the corporations, and that historically in the United States, we have held that the purpose of an economy, the reason why we allow corporations to incorporate, the reason why, you know, we all pay tax dollars to create institutions like the Secretary of State's office so that you can create a business, and we maintain with our tax dollars the commons of the judicial system and stable currencies and things, that we do all these things because we want to encourage people to play the game of business, because playing the game of business, while it does make people money, that's a wonderful and salutary thing, it has a larger goal from the point of view of all of us, and that is that it serves the people.
Well, but without making money, you can't do anything. And once you retard growth, that hurts everybody.
Well, wait a second. You can't say without making money you can't do anything. I mean, tell that to any nonprofit.
Well, nonprofits rely on donations from money-making enterprises and individuals who are making money in the market. They're not unless they're government-funded.
Okay, tell that to the 70 or 80% of corporations in America that pay no income taxes because they don't make any money, but they're still doing business. They're paying salaries. You don't have to show a profit just in order to do business and pay salaries.
What's a different problem as far as the way
Well, it's the difference between free enterprise and capitalism. I mean, if you have to pay dividends to your stockholders, you have to generate profits, and most small businesses don't pay dividends to their stockholders, so profits may be secondary in their concern. In fact, for a small business, profits are a problem because, you know, you have increased taxation on that. It's better just to take it out as salary. But
I think you hit on a very important point there. Exactly. I mean, a lot of corporations do have a lot of influence. And they do like to skew, the rules of the game to their favor,
which hurts
small businesses. And one of the ways they do that is regulation, because regulations carry a lot of compliance costs, which large enterprises can very easily meet, whereas small businesses don't. I mean,
right. This is why Dow Chemical, for example, lobbies for regulations. It's why Monsanto actually went to George Herbert Walker Bush when he was vice president and got him to create regulations about genetically modified organisms before they had any, to keep smaller competitors out of the marketplace. But that's a whole other issue. My concern, Ivan Osorio with CEI.org, is about the whole issue of establishing some sort of minimum wage, establishing minimum wages, and your suggestion that that's going to somehow harm the economy, and my suggestion that without that, you're not going to have a middle class. And which is more important, having an economy that works in your mind, and a Dickensian world, Bob Cratchit and Mr. Scrooge kind of world, or having a middle class?
Well, having a middle class is very important. And for that, you need economic growth. However,
But wait a minute. We have never, in the 7,000-year history of capitalism and free enterprise, there has never been a middle class without government intervention.
Okay, that's not really the case.
It absolutely is. Read Dickens. Read Adam Smith. Read Ricardo.
Look at Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Hong Kong has very, very little government intervention.
And have you ever been in Hong Kong? I have worked in Hong Kong, and I'll tell you, the vast majority of the people in Hong Kong are poor. There are slums that just extend for, and they're the working poor. It's massive.
But there's plenty of opportunity, and people do move up.
Sure. Hong Kong is sort of that Dickensian world where you can be very rich or you can be very poor and working. But I don't think that that's the ideal for America. We would like to have a middle class. Our ideal is more like the European ideal that those liberals, that nasty liberal Harry Truman inflicted on them, on Germany, and when they helped rebuild France, where they said, we're going to give them strong labor protections, because if all the power resides with the corporations, as you're recommending, you're going to end up without a middle class. You're going to end up with a lot of poor working people and a lot of very profitable corporations and a small number of very rich people.
And we can end up like Germany with 12% unemployment.
Well, I would argue that Germany's unemployment problem, first of all, they're more honest about their unemployment numbers than we are, and number one. But number two, I'd say that that unemployment problem, setting aside the problem of reunification, I lived there in 86 and 87 and saw that happening, but setting aside that problem, that it's because they're pursuing the policies that you guys are recommending. They're moving in the direction of Thatcherism and Reaganism, and it's wiping out their economy.
No, they're absolutely not. I mean, Schroeder has made some very, very, very little, very few moves.
Schroeder has been pushed hard to the right, and he's got a hard right competitor right now who's head and head with him. But I don't think most Americans understand German politics enough for us to be arguing that. We only have about a minute left. How can you justify saying that just because people have been hit by a tragedy, they should be forced to work for less than the prevailing wage?
They need work. They need, and it's not an unprecedented move. President George H.W. Bush did this in 1992 after Hurricane Andrew, and it led to an explosion in construction in South Florida.
Well, the explosion in construction was because billions of federal, or hundreds of millions of federal dollars went down there. That had nothing to do with how much people are being paid.
Well, it's for federal contracts. The Davis-Bacon is for federal contracts.
Right. Right, and all that federal money came down, and so you've got a lot of people being paid. That's an explosion. But whether they're being paid $9 an hour or $7 an hour is for the people who are actually doing the work. The difference between being able to feed their family and not, in some cases.
Well, I'm looking at the result. I mean, South Florida is booming now, thanks to that.
Because of federal dollars.
Well, no, because a lot of regulations were lifted.
You think now, it's because they suspended Davis-Bacon?
I'm not. There's no single cause. Now the federal dollars, though, yeah. CEI is actually not in favor of federal funding of development. I mean,
that's your economic boom down there. It's the rebuilding with federal dollars.
Oh, that's part of it. But just because it works doesn't mean it may or may not work. But regulations have more to do with it.
Okay, Ivan Alisario, good conversation. I thank you so much.
Good
back and forth here. I appreciate your coming on the program. Hope you can come on again sometime. Competitive Enterprise Institute, CEI.org. And thank you again, Ivan. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some free market think tank. 16 and a half minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome to New Orleans.
Federal, state, and local governments are working side by side to sustain lives by ensuring adequate food, water, shelter, and medical supplies for survivors and dedicated citizens, our dislocated citizens.
At that time, he was making a big deal about telling the nation that the convention center had been secured.
FEMA's moving supplies and equipment into the hardest hit areas.
All they had done, as Geraldo Rivera actually reported on Fox, was they locked people in.
This is it. This is it. No sugarcoating, no political spin, no Republicans or Democrats. People suffering. Let them go. Let them out of here. Let them walk over this damn interstate and let them out of here.
I want to get some perspective here, because earlier today the images
were...
Hang on a second.
That is all the perspective you need.
Hang on a second.
Anyone who walks up out of that city now is turned around.
I don't know, man. I don't... Let them walk the hell out of here. Let them get on that interstate and walk out to the Walmart on the other side of the river, to some other town, some place where you can help them. All you got here is thousands and thousands of people 6 days later, same clothes.
And welcome back, my friends. 22 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. The True People's Radio program. Prince Harry! Just a few shorties here, and then we'll take a few phone calls, and we have the Talk Radio News Service with a report from Washington, D.C., too. Prince Harry has said he is ready to go to Iraq. Jenna and Barbara, no interest. Prince Harry just graduated from Sandhurst. He wants to go to Iraq. Ellen Ratner with the, Charlene? We talk
That's
Radio
right.
News? Hey, it's Charlene with the Talk Radio News Service. Hey, what's up?
I'm down in Gulfport, Mississippi with Ellen Ratner right now, and we're down here in a different type of embedded journalist, I guess you would say. We're helping out a small community rebuild their lives.
Mm-hmm. And how's it working?
Well, it's, I tell you, they say it's more blessed to give than receive. I have learned so much from these people. They, you know, they are what we would characterize as the working poor, meaning that they're working sometimes a couple of jobs, but they're very dedicated to their families and to their community, but they don't have any kind of disposable income to go out and do the sort of immediate repairs to their homes to make them livable before any FEMA or insurance settlements. So what we're doing is we're actually buying them supplies. We are delivering the supplies and in some cases helping them to restore the roofs and some of the sidewall in their homes.
That's absolutely marvelous. And I assume you're doing this without federal money and without Red Cross money.
That's right. We have a couple of donors, but most of the assets are coming from Ellen's family, Forest City Ratner Developers in the New York City area in Brooklyn and the Brooklyn Nets. And what we're doing is, and what they really like also is we're trying to promote this on Talk Radio News website. It's the Mount Zion Methodist Church, but it makes you think it's just one church, but they really reach out to people beyond just their church in the Gulfport and DeLille, Mississippi area, even taking Home Depot, Lowe's cards, gift cards, Walmart cards, if you don't want to send cash. And I assure you that they are targeting these assets to the people in need.
That's great. And that's on talkradionews.com?
Yes, sir.
Great. Okay. Charlene.
In fact, go ahead.
No, finish up.
Well, I was just going to say, Ellen will be on the phone right now, but she's going into the community center here to help get a woman's check. This woman has been displaced. She's in a shelter about 6 hours north of here, but her employer won't release the check to the husband, so Ellen's going in there to retrieve the check with her.
If anybody can do it, Ellen can do it.
With her bravado, exactly.
There you go. Charlene with the Talk Radio News Service, thanks so much for the report today. And keep up the great work. People can find out more about that at talkradionews.com. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number, Rama in Williamstown, Vermont. Hey, Rama.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up, Rama?
Well, Geraldo Rivera hollering, "Let my people go." There's a thought for you.
Yeah, that's it's a great bumper. One of our listeners, I don't have his name right in front of me. I'm sorry. It's Stephen, sent that a montage of audio clips he'd put together to us, and Louise sliced and diced it as a bumper, as bumpers. So we'll hear more of those.
It was a great job. Congrats to Ellen Day, Ellen and what she's doing, Ratner, down
yeah.
there. But going back to the Davis-Bacon real quick, just
yes,
a couple
sir.
Comments. One is, you know, there's no way you can separate a person from their labor. It's illogical to think about it. In order for the person to do something, their body and their mind, they have to be their body, soul, you know. And so when these people start talking about putting the cost of labor out onto some sort of a free market, they're literally saying, let's treat people as a commodity.
That's right. And that's what they've been doing. That's what conservatives have been doing all the way back to slavery.
Yep. Absolutely.
Is human labor is a commodity. And that's why, and we didn't believe that in the United States. I mean, after the end, from the end of slavery until Ronald Reagan became president, we said labor's not a commodity. Labor is us. And we want to have a middle class. And so we're going to create a middle class in the United States with things like the Wagner Act in 1935 that allowed for unionization in the United States and provided for, you know, creating the Department of Labor and things like that. And then Reagan came along, declared war on organized labor, said, we don't need no stinking middle class. We just need cheap labor so that the CEOs can become billionaires and give more money to the Republicans. And sure enough, that's exactly what's happened in the last 25 years. So
very succinctly put. Thank you,
yeah.
Tom.
Yeah, thank you, Rama. I appreciate the call. Always good to hear from you there in Vermont. Rama, one of the Rama used to help us out on this program. He helped us get this program started and was one of our original producers. So it's great to hear from you, Rama. Thank you. It is 28 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman here with you. Truth and common sense in broadcasting for a change.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
It's New Orleans.
It's so hot, not we?
Is there anything y'all can do from y'all then to call these agencies at a higher level from the industry down here?
Airdrop, water, food.
Why
can't they do that to their own people?
Good morning, America. How are you? Said, don't you know me? I'm your native son. I'm the city of New Orleans. I'll be gone.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, 35 minutes past the hour, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. Time for our weekly wrap-up at the end of the week here, where we get into what's going on with some of the folks out there in the blogosphere who are very much in a position to know. John Gideon with VoterUnite.org. Voter, is that voter or voters?
Voters.
That's what I thought. VoterUnite.org. John Gideon, the information manager, and Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com. Hey, Brad.
How are you, Tom?
Great, but I'll get better. Great to have both of you with us. Brad, first of all, to you, BradBlog.com has broken a story about Diebold.
Yes, sir. Pretty major story here that I broke just late last night, and I've been phone's been ringing off the hook all morning on this one. We've got a deep throat. For the first time, an insider is speaking about what's gone on at Diebold, and in fact has pointed out that Homeland Security actually issued a cyber alert prior to the election last year in November, pointing out the fact that there is a huge backdoor vulnerability in the central tabulator system for Diebold voting machines.
Now, let me get this right, and let me perhaps frame it a little differently than a news person may frame it. It sounds to me like you're telling me that one of the intelligence apparatuses of this Republican administration sent out a notification to all of the other Republican operatives within the administration across the United States that it was possible to hack into the Diebold voting machines, and here's how to do it.
Well, that is an interesting way to look at it. In fact, it wasn't just sent out, of course, to Republicans. It was sent out to everything. It was actually published on the U.S. CERT website. I've got a link to it. It's actually still there, a cybersecurity bulletin. That's from the United States Computer Emergency Readiness Team, which is a branch of the Department of Homeland Security. And it explained the vulnerability that's available. It was actually discovered by Black Box Voting prior to that, but apparently the Homeland Security Department was able to verify it and posted it out there for all to find. And, in fact, what it means and what it says is that a malicious user could, in fact, change an entire election by simply accessing this back door.
And this was all before 2004, before the 2004 election.
Correct. I believe this was posted August 31, 2004. And I spoke with a Diebold spokesman about it yesterday who claimed to know nothing about it and claims that any such information is merely allegations and it's not verified. And you know, I said, well, what about the fact that Homeland Security has posted this over a year ago? And he said, oh, I don't know anything about that. And, of course, I
know nothing.
Yes, that's right. I sent him a link. And what he sent back was a report from I think it's MIT talking about the fact that in 2004 there were fewer votes lost than in 2000 or something like that, that frankly had nothing to do with this very serious security issue that this patriotic source has decided to come forward and talk about finally for the first time. Someone intimately involved with Diebold is speaking.
Incredible.
Yeah.
And in the speaking, they appear to be saying, essentially...
I know nothing, I see nothing, and I say nothing.
Yeah.
That's about it, yeah.
Okay, Brad Friedman with Brad Block. John Gideon with VotersUnite.org. John, what's happening in your world there?
Well, part of my work is to read the news, and I compile a clipping service, so there's all kinds of things happening besides Brad's great work. Right now, the folks in New Jersey and New York are having to change over their voting systems, get rid of their much beloved lever machines, and in some cases, their punch card machines. And one of the companies that is in the running to sell voting machines in those two states is a company called Liberty. They sell a Liberty ESU-1 DRE.
DRE is in digital what?
Direct Record Electronic.
Thank you. Direct Record Electronic.
These are the touchscreen voting machines.
Right. No paper trail touchscreen machines.
That's exactly right. Well, this particular machine that they're selling is an ESU-1 voting machine. Strangely enough, this same machine, which happens to be made by a Norwegian company, NEDAP, has also been sold in Germany, France, in some places in the United Kingdom, and to the country of Ireland. Ireland got the exact same machines. They paid 44 million Irish pounds or punt for the machines, and found out that they are not accurate, they're not secure, and the machines, since they bought them, have been sitting, much to the disgrace of the party that's in power in Ireland, they've been sitting in warehouses drawing dust.
Yeah, well, you know, Canada sent back the ones that they had from us last year, the year before. They said, you know, enough already. We don't want this stuff. We don't need those thinking voting machines. We'll go back to paper.
Yeah.
So, fascinating story. John Gideon with VotersUnite.org and Brad Friedman with BradBlog.com. Brad Friedman, what are the other big stories of the week that you've been reporting on in your blog, and what do you see coming down the road for next week?
Well, actually, I got, and you know what? Before I hit that, Tom, let me just toss in a really good word for John Gideon for VotersUnite.org. Because they are an absolute invaluable resource for everything that's going on right now in election reform. And as you know, Tom, there are millions and millions of dollars currently being spent by the federal government, being given to counties and states all over the country, and it's being put into voting machines that simply do not work.
It's HAVA, and it should should have been called the Leave No Voting Machine Company Behind Act.
Yeah, I mean, the evidence is, it is a mountain of evidence that these damn machines don't work, and the fact of the matter is many of the counties down in Florida, for example, after the 2000, they switched to these machines, and what do you know, they found out they didn't work, and now they're getting rid of them. And out here in California, we just had a huge mock election test where 20% of the machines during this test actually failed in California, the Diebold machines. And so they're not allowed to come into California at all with those machines. And yet back in Ohio, that's the very machines they're buying. So I just wanted to put out a good word for VotersUnite.org and the work John does and the email that he sends out. I don't know if it's public or not. I hope so, that because he sends out these terrific headlines on everything that's going on 7 days a week around the country. So please, listeners, be sure to stop by VotersUnite.org and sign up for that list if you can.
Thank you.
What else is going on? Some breaking news, actually. Don't know if you picked this one up, but back at Camp Casey, you remember that, Crawford, Texas. I found out this morning from the folks at the Lone Star Iconoclast down in Crawford that the remaining memorial that was staying in Camp Casey, including crosses and Casey Sheehan's boots and so forth, was stolen.
Yeah, in fact, everything there was stolen. They even took some of the tents. I mean, the site was stripped. It just looks like a ditch again.
Yep.
And apparently, some folks observed this going on, and they thought it must have been some folks from Cindy Sheehan's group just cleaning up or something. But no, it was vandals.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, it's incredible because I spent about 10 days up there broadcasting on the ground in Camp Casey and meeting all the folks who were out there and you know, seeing the memorial and the crosses that were set up by the Iraq vets and the Afghan vets and everything else. And it's just, it's heartbreaking. And I know the folks, the pro-war, pro-Bush folks that came by with, you know, constantly with their support the troops signs that they were flashing to the very troops that had just gotten back
right.
from Iraq.
Yeah, the incredible irony of that.
Yeah.
Brad Friedman, thank you. John Gideon, we have a little less than a minute left. Other headlines that you want to share with us or big news you see coming?
I want to remind everybody that at the end of the month, there is a Portland Summit coming up. All on voting issues.
Yep.
And
Jesse Jackson Jr. will be speaking. I'll be speaking.
I'll be there.
You'll both be there.
Yes, sir.
There you go. There's going to be a bunch of us. And people can find out more information about that. How, John Gideon?
www.oregonvrc.org.
Okay, oregonvrc.org. And there's also a gig tonight, isn't there?
Yeah, actually, I think is Bob Fetrakis.
Yeah, Bob Fetrakis and I are speaking tonight at Portland State University. That's right, at PSU.
And he's got a terrific book.
Yeah.
Make sure your folks read his book on the evidence of what happened in 2004.
Yeah, it's pretty startling what did happen, the jumping votes and all that sort of thing. So, John Gideon, votersunite.org, Brad Friedman, bradblog.com. Thank you both, gentlemen, for being with us today.
See y'all in a few weeks.
Okay, keep up the great work. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Telling the truth of multinational corporations, I would really rather you didn't know about. Exposing the con in conservative.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
I don't think anybody anticipated the breach of the levees.
Liar.
They anticipate a serious storm. But these levees got breached, and as a result, much of New Orleans is flooded.
He didn't think anybody had anticipated that.
Liar.
Saturday before the storm hit.
If we had a direct hit of Category 4 or 5, and maybe even a Category 3, we would be totally inundated with water. You couldn't pump it all out.
I don't think anybody anticipated the breach of the levees.
The levees in Jefferson Parish, with the tidal surge that is presently forecast, will be top. We can expect our community to be significantly underwater and for a number of days.
I don't think anybody anticipated the breach of the levees.
This is a city built on the coast in an area that has hurricanes and is built below sea levels and that is a super. People have talked for years about whether it makes sense to have a city like that.
I don't think anybody anticipated the breach of the levees.
It looks like Hurricane Sligo is headed right for us here in America's wetland.
That's right, and since New Orleans is below sea level, if a hurricane hit us directly, it could push the water over the levees and fill it to the top. Let's act now before it's too late.
Yes, let's act now before it's too late. And then it was too late, and George W. went to Arizona and had cake with John McCain. And then it was even later than that, and people were dying and drowning. And he went to California to talk to elderly people about Social Security reform and Medicaid. And all the while, his aides were furiously, frantically terrified, terrified about the possibility of having to give the bad news to the boy king president, to George W. Bush, that New Orleans was drowning and Michael Chertoff, who had direct responsibility for doing something about it, was doing nothing. Nothing. And so finally Dan Bartlett on Wednesday night puts together a DVD of the news reports because George W. will not watch television and will not read newspapers. Puts together a DVD of what's going on and gives it to George W. to watch on Air Force One and says, you got to see this thing. You got to know what's going on as you're flying down there to make your appearance. Amazing. Tragic. And then on top of that, you've got the big lie out there. It started with this email going around. I told you about this 2 days ago. This email that seems to have originated deep within the bowels of the Rove swift boat machine, saying that even though Kathleen Blanco, even though the governor of Louisiana on Saturday had declared a state of emergency and asked for a federal declaration of emergency, on Sunday Bush signed it. On Monday, he goes back on vacation. Tuesday, he's in Arizona. Wednesday, he's out in San Diego, blah, de, blah, de, blah. She's frantically trying to get him on the phone. He's not taking her phone calls. She's begging for help. You got Ray Nagin on the radio saying, somebody send us some help, please. There's nothing. We got people dying here. Ray Nagin, the mayor, having to go on the radio because Washington, D.C. won't take his calls. Nonetheless, the big lie being promoted. The big lie being promoted.
It is flat out absurd. Bush was begging that governor on the Sunday before the hurricane hit to get people out of there and to declare an emergency. Bush was on the phone with her. They were thinking about sending the military in because the state and local people weren't acting fast enough.
Nope. It's a lie. It is a lie. And all you have to do is look at the official government websites and see the real timeline to know it's a lie. Marie in Seattle, Washington. Hey, Marie, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi. Finally, I get to talk to you.
Well, I'm sorry. It's our phone lines have been slammed all day.
Oh, I know.
Long,
you're a pretty popular,
crazy person, yes.
Well, I don't know if it's just...
Anyhow, what's up, Marie?
Well, I was just thinking that Abraham Lincoln would be rolling around in his grave right now.
Oh, yeah.
And
he knew how to deal with a national emergency. To his credit, and Jeff Davis's too, I suppose, neither one of them expected the Civil War would last more than 3 months. But when it turned into a horrific thing, he did deal with it with some compassion. And
yeah, he related to the people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so did Harry.
Yeah, Harry Truman, yeah.
But I was just wondering, too, if you had a chance to check out Jay Leno last night.
I'm sorry, I was sound asleep. What did I mean?
Well, anyway, if you can ever get a sound bite or something of his show last night, he had Donald Trump on there, and you would just be in your element if you could have heard Donald Trump.
Going after George W. Bush?
Oh, I mean, in a big way. So if you can, get it was last night on Jay Leno.
Amazing. Well, I won't be able to, but or maybe I can. I don't know. We'll see if we can find it. But
and
Marie, thanks for the tip.
And also, that independent politician that you had on there, I can't think of his name.
Congressman Bernie Sanders.
That's it. I was wondering, since Ross Perot was an independent, wasn't he?
He was.
Well,
then he created his own party.
Well, anyway, he's not a Republican, anyway.
Right.
But I'm wondering why nobody has talked to Ross Perot in regard to jobs, because when he was talking about NAFTA, when he was running, a lot of people laughed at him, and he said, do you hear that hissing sound, you know, about the jobs being sucked out?
Right.
And everybody was laughing at him, and now who's got the last laugh?
You're absolutely right, Marie. The crazy old coot with the big ears was spot on correct. He was spot on right, and thank you for that call, Marie. Good to hear from you. Ross Perot was out there saying that a national economy needs to be a national economy, that there is a good reason to have trade between governments or between countries. If one country makes something that another country doesn't have, and you make something that they don't have, you can trade it and you can both have it. That's right out of Adam Smith, right out of The Wealth of Nations, published in 1776. However, if you can both make the same thing, and they just happen to have cheaper labor, it's not in your interest to trade in that product. Because what that's going to do is it's going to wipe out your domestic industries, and it's going to drive down the cost of labor in your country, which is going to kill off your middle class. And we understood that in the United States from 1787 when we passed our first tariff laws, right up until Ronald Reagan came into office. And then Reagan, Bush, Clinton, and Bush kicked out all of our tariff protections and put in these multilateral trade policies, basically where multinational corporations got to write the rules for themselves and not for us. And sure enough, that great sucking sound, there you go. That crazy old coot, Ross Perot, he was right. on that issue anyway. It was a little strange on a few others, but he was right on that. It's Tom Hartman here with you. Talk radio for the rest of us.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast on Sirius Satellite Radio, on cable, on CRN Digital, RadioPower.org, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Our toll-free telephone number, 1-866-889-8894, across the United States. Outside the United States, 503-248-0620. David in Seattle, Washington on the line. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, love your program.
Thank you.
Yeah, we need to release our collective anger against those who have been allowed to rule unjustly. Yes, they are rapscallions, and yes, they are self-centered fools. But they are also the tools that we, the people, created in order to become aware of the blind and lazy allegiances many of us gave.
What are you talking about, David?
As far as the people in the Gulf states and the suffering that they've endured, and all of Americans. I mean, we've been emotionally traumatized by what the hurricane has just ripped off and revealed, this festering wound in slavery, in disenfranchisement, in poverty, that, you know, the powers that are controlling our government are minimizing.
Sure, and Bush's first response to this is, let's do away with Davis-Bacon. Let's do away with the Prevailing Wage Act. I mean, it is so transparently and patently and disgustingly obvious what their
Isn't
real
it?
Agenda is all about.
Unbelievable.
And it, yeah, and it's just like, you know, what are they going to do with this? It's here, in 2001... This is from David Sirota, just put this thing out in the San Francisco Chronicle. He's talking about, in 2001, Republicans passed a $1.3 trillion tax cut at the same time they pushed massive cuts to America's flood and hurricane protection programs. 2003, Bush pushes a $125 billion plan to eliminate taxes on stock dividends while cutting funds that his own Army Corps of Engineers said were needed to maintain flood control infrastructure in southeast Louisiana. The next year, the White House pushed a $1 trillion plan to make the president's previous tax cuts permanent. The same year, the New Orleans Times-Picayune reported, for the first time in 37 years, federal budget cuts have all but stopped work on the New Orleans East Bank hurricane levees. Even this year, as the White House pushed to repeal the estate tax on the wealthiest 2% of Americans, George W. Bush proposing a budget that would provide almost $300 million less for the Army Corps of Engineers than it said was needed for critical infrastructure improvements in and around New Orleans. It is a tragedy of epic proportions, and what it very, very much does is it exposes the real agenda. I mean, take a look at the Washington Post today. Who's in charge? Karl Rove, article in yesterday's Washington Post, by Dan Frumkin. And he talks about what the real agenda is here. And he's quoting the Wall Street Journal from the day before, an article by Wilkie and Mullins. Congressional Republicans, backed by the White House, say they are using relief measures for the hurricane-ravaged Gulf Coast to achieve a broad range of conservative economic and social policies. Say what? You have people dying, and you're sitting around saying, oh, how can we make political hay with this? Well, the first thing you do is you follow Adolf Hitler's advice. Whatever you're doing, you accuse your opponent of it. That way they can't accuse you of it. It sounds like they're whining. In the past week, from the Wall Street Journal, in the past week, the Bush administration has suspended some union-friendly rules that require federal contractors to pay prevailing wages, moved to ease tariffs on Canadian lumber, That would be a giveaway to the Home Depot companies and folks like that and the big building contractors. Allowed more foreign sugar imports to calm rising sugar prices. Yeah, this is a real concern here. Sugar prices going up. The Mars family, of course, one of the big promoters of ending the so-called death tax, the inheritance tax. Just yesterday, quoting from the Wall Street Journal from day before yesterday, just yesterday it waived some affirmative action rules for employers with federal contracts in the Gulf region. Oh, yeah, there just aren't enough African Americans down there in the Gulf region to be able to find and hire them, so we have to waive the affirmative action minimums. Say what? Now, again, back to the Wall Street Journal, now Republicans are working on legislation that would limit victims' right to sue. Should we be surprised? Offer vouchers for displaced school children. Lift some environmental restrictions on new refineries and create tax-advantaged enterprise zones to maximize private sector participation in recovery and reconstruction. In other words, it's a bonanza. It's a feeding frenzy. Alan in Trumansburg, New York. Hey, Alan, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. I just read your article on your website titled How to Take Back a Stolen Election, where you describe how activists did it in the Ukraine and Belarus and Serbia.
Yeah, and Soviet Georgia as well, although they were unsuccessful there, but they tried it in those four countries. Right.
Oh, that's excellent. An excellent article.
Thank you.
Two questions. You mentioned that Ed Gillespie called for an end to exit polls, which are critical to this plan for taking back stolen elections. Was he successful? Did they pass legislation to stop exit polls?
I don't think that they needed legislation. To the best of my knowledge, nobody is planning on doing exit polls for the 2006 or 2008 elections right now. And I sat with Howard Dean about 4 months ago and said, if the Democratic Party has any money at all, you should be getting together with John Zogby or somebody of his reputation, somebody who is perceived as nonpartisan, no axe to grind, and knows how to do an exit poll, and make sure that you've got good, solid national exit polls. And he was like, well, it's a good idea, but we don't know. We'll see what happens. I'm very concerned that we're not going to have exit polls. We'll be talking with Bob Fitrakis about this kind of stuff in a little bit. He may have some further insights on it.
The news agencies just sort of gave up on their own? I don't get it. Why would they just stop?
Well, here's what happened. In the year 2000, in the 2000 elections, the exit polls were so different. After 50 years of exit polls almost always being absolutely accurate, you know, the Truman Dewey election being one that one newspaper called differently. But by and large, the exit polls, even on that one, were right. After 50, 60 years of the exit polls being accurate, after other countries like Germany, where they vote on paper and it takes 4 days to count the vote, but within an hour of the closing of the polls, everybody knows who won because the exit polls are never more than 0.1% off. In the year 2000, for the first time in the history of the United States, as we started voting with all these electronic machines, and as the Bush family got in on this, the exit polls were terribly, terribly off. They showed Al Gore overwhelmingly winning the entire United States, or not the entire United States, but winning the election and the state of Florida. And so that consortium that had been put together to do the exit polls, they had to kind of go back to plan B. Well, let's try and figure this thing out. And then you get to the 2004 election. 2002 election, again, another disaster. 2004 election, Mitofsky Edison. Again, the exit polls are off, and in particular in the swing states. And so now the exit poll companies are going, we can't do this. We're just getting egg on our face. But again, as I said, we'll ask Bob about that. We'll get a little more information right after the break on that. Evan in Olympia, Washington. Hey, Evan, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, I want to thank you for your great knowledge of history and tying it all together. I think you're really a great progressive voice. And I think that anybody who thinks that the pig man could stand up to you in a debate is crazy because you have reason on your side.
God bless you, Evan. What's your call about?
Well, I have a couple things to say. One is that I don't understand why these people can be called conservatives when they wish to save nothing. They don't want to save resources, standard of living. They don't want to protect our dollar, our jobs. They don't want to conserve anything.
No, they've hijacked the word. These are not conservatives. These are radicals.
Exactly.
Barry
right.
Goldwater is rolling over in his grave.
It's ridiculous, you know, and there have been good conservatives in the past who would never have ever stood for this, and they're good conservatives now who actually do see the forward thinking.
Yeah, like,
you know?
Jim Jeffords.
Right.
Jim Jeffords left the Republican Party.
They believe that we should be investing in alternative fuels and conservation, and these
right.
are the things that are going to lead us out. Progressives for the last 40 years have been forward thinking, looking at our environment, our word, our world and based on facts and reason, trying to find solutions to help take us along.
Yeah.
And there is nothing that you know, there's going to be a time where all this knowledge is going to be needed. And so I just want to commend you for getting the good word out there.
Thank you very much, Evan. I appreciate it. Stacy in Inverness, Florida. We have a little less than half a minute left. Stacy, what's up?
I was thinking about Bush's speech last night.
Mm-hmm.
In the middle of the speech, I mean, there's been a lot of talk about the amount of money that is going to be spent in order to get everybody back on track.
Right.
One of the things that really haven't been discussed, though, nestled in the middle of the speech, Bush made mention that he would like for our military to have more of an active role.
Right, he wants to do away with posse comitatus.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that absolutely terrifies me. I mean, you know,
Oh yeah, the next thing you know, he'll be quartering troops in soldiers' houses in violation of the Third Amendment, which
exactly.
Most people don't even remember is there. This is posse comitatus. For those people who don't know, is a law which has been on the books since the 19th century that says that the army cannot perform police functions within the United States, and it's designed to prevent a military coup, essentially, or prevent the executive from abusing the army. Thanks, Stacy. I appreciate it. 16 minutes past the hour.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
6 feet of water in the streets of Louisiana.
You simply get chills every time you see them.
Louisiana.
These poor individuals, so many of these people.
They're trying to wash us away.
They are so poor.
They're trying to wash us away.
They are so poor.
Some people got lost in the flood.
And they are so black.
Some people got away all right.
I'm white.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. Talk radio for the rest of us. Bob Fetrakis is with us. Bob, welcome to the program.
Oh, good to be here.
It's great having you right here in the studio with us, Bob. We have a... first of all, Bob, you do so many different things and wear so many different hats. Rather than my giving your bio, why don't you tell people what's the best website to find out information about what you're doing and all that sort of thing?
Freepress.org, which I'm the editor of freepress.org.
Okay. Bob is also an attorney in Ohio. You're a participant in the lawsuits that David Cobb and Michael Badnarik filed in the Ohio attempt to find out whether or not there was a stolen election in the state of Ohio. You've been involved with John Kerry in that role. You and I are going, among others, Jesse Jackson Jr., David Cobb, Bob Kohler, Ronnie Duggar, Cliff Arnebeck, Ellen Thiessen, or is it Thiessen? It's Thiessen, isn't it? I believe.
Thiessen,
okay. And Paul Lato are going to be speaking in Portland, Oregon, Friday, September 30th through Sunday, October 2nd. This is the National Summit to Save Our Elections, and the website for information on that is summit.oregonvrc.org, summit.oregonvrc.org. And Bob, was the election in Ohio stolen by Bush and his machine?
Yeah, I believe it was. I believe you can't come to any other conclusion if you look at the massive, massive irregularities. I think the private partisan corporations that count the vote and donate to Bush stole that election in Southwest Ohio, and they were allowed to do so because they suppressed tens of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands of votes in the urban inner city areas.
So we're talking here about the good old-fashioned voter theft, sort of like the Jim Crow era, where basically people were simply disenfranchised, purged from the voter rolls, told that they were in the wrong place, they didn't have enough voting machines, that kind of stuff?
Well, I think the best description is that it's high-tech Tammany meets old-fashioned Jim Crow thuggery.
Hmm. And what about the voting machines themselves? Any evidence that they got hacked or tampered with?
Well, you know, when you're PDFing a screen and it's 1:43 a.m. and 100% of the votes have reported from Miami County, and suddenly 19,000 more votes come in, 13,000 for the president, 6,000 for Kerry. 100% is 100%. And when they come in at the exact same ratio, as if somebody had preset that and pushed a button on the computer, you need to be greatly, greatly concerned.
What county, what precinct, where did this
happen? Miami County, and then you look...
Miami County, Ohio.
Yes. And when you look at it closely, then you've got a precinct there, South Concord. They claim 98.55% of the voters voted. The problem is that means that out of 689 voters, 679 voted without absentees or provisional ballots. We went up there and looked around for a few hours and found 25 people willing to sign affidavits that they didn't vote. The numbers make no sense, nor did they make sense in Gahanna Ward 1B, where 638 people voted, and lo and behold, a miracle, 4,258 votes were recorded for President Bush.
Why is this, what you're describing right now sounds to me like like a felony. This is fraud. This is the theft of an American election by the Bush machine. Why aren't they being prosecuted?
Every single state official elected in the state of Ohio, except for one Supreme Court justice, is a Republican. And they accomplished this in part by moving $14 million in illegal corporate money, anonymous illegal corporate money, to take over a moderate Supreme Court in Ohio, and every elected statewide office, which they did in part by laundering $50 million in stolen money from the Bureau of Workers' Comp into the Republican coffers. That's the so-called CoinGate.
But Bob, we're talking about Bob Fitrakis, freepress.org, and the event coming up here, summit.oregonvrc.org. But Bob, Ken Blackwell's running around saying, well, in every single precinct there was both a Democrat and a Republican observing the vote.
Well, you know, how do you observe the vote on DRE, on faith-based voting machines? You press a machine and you pray that it'll tabulate it correctly with no paper trail. How do you observe that? I mean, technicians come in with badges from Triad and from ESNS and from Diebold, and they come in the middle of election and they shut down machines. They replace hard drives. They change the central tabulator, and everyone sits back. Sure, that can be observed, but like, these elected officials don't know what programs are running in their machines. They don't know the source code. So yeah, sure, they observed technicians coming in and telling them everything was going perfectly for Bush.
So it's quite apparent to you then that Bush stole the election, that this is two elections in a row then. He was appointed by the Supreme Court in the first one, and the Republican machine in Ohio stole the second election in 2004.
Sure, and they did it in a lot of ways, including running an election in Franklin County, which cost Kerry up to 20,000 votes in the inner city, by simply not having enough machines. You needed 5,000 machines to run that election in Franklin County. They had 2,866, of which they forgot to put out 125, all in the inner city, where people were voting 80 and 90% for John Kerry.
And the best website to find more on this would be freepress.org?
Freepress.org.
Great. Bob Fitrakis, the National Summit to Save Our Elections coming up, summit.oregonvrc.org. Bob, thanks for being with us today.
Oh, glad to be in the studio.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Now, listen.
President says it was that man you made ashamed. What the river has done, there's poor crackers laid.
Out of the rubbles of Trent Lott's house, his hat lost his entire house, there's going to be a fantastic house, and I'm looking forward to sitting on the porch.
Michael Chertoff, the Secretary of Homeland Security, sounds like he doesn't know what's been going on at the convention center in New Orleans for the past 2 days.
I have not heard a report of thousands of people in the convention center who don't have food and water.
Michael Brown, nominated to the post by President Bush, director of the Federal Emergency Management Agency and director of the
retarded mismanagement of Hurricane Katrina.
Confirmation hearings for this guy were 42 minutes long.
and only 5 senators showed up.
Hey there, people, I'm Michael Brown.
Every person in that convention center, we just learned about that today.
So you're not telling me.
Those bodies that are there.
So you're not telling me you just learned that the folks at the convention center didn't have food and water until today, are you? You had no idea they were completely cut off?
Thanks to Stephen McQuillan for putting together some of those audio montages that we've been using as bumpers today. Good on you, Stephen. Good work. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Welcome back to the place where smart people get their news. Andy Borowitz has a take on all this, theborowitzreport.com. Bush determined to plan the next catastrophe. It will be a catastrophic success, says the president. In a nationally televised address last night, George W. Bush said that Hurricane Katrina had taken him by surprise, but promised the American people, "As long as I sit in this chair, all future catastrophes will be planned by me." Attempting to reassure the country that he had a firm hand on the ship of state, the president said, "If there are going to be tremendous disasters that impact thousands or millions of American lives, then it's going to happen on my schedule and on my terms." Backing up his rhetoric with action, the president said he was going to make disasters a top priority of his administration by creating a cabinet-level post tentatively called the Secretary of Catastrophe. It will be the Secretary of Catastrophe's job to devise, plan, and implement all major disasters going forward, the president said. While Mr. Bush did not indicate whether the next catastrophe would be of an economic, foreign policy, or ecological nature, he concluded with this promise: "The White House will plan the next catastrophe, and it will be a catastrophic success." But according to Dr. Ivan Peslow of the University of Minnesota, the creation of a Secretary of Catastrophe, while well-intended, may result in an unnecessary level of bureaucracy. "The president has a lot of manpower, such as Donald Rumsfeld, Condoleezza Rice, and Michael Chertoff," said Dr. Peslow, "who are already creating catastrophes on more or less a full-time basis. We don't need to add to that." Elsewhere, Supreme Court nominee John Roberts said that an American's right to privacy should not include having to answer questions before a Senate Judiciary Committee. Add from Andy Borowitz, BorowitzReport.com. Tragically, there's a large element of truth to it. I mean, the reality is that, here, George W. Bush, he was asleep at the switch in September of 2001. He comes into office, and Al Gore says to Dick Cheney, as he's handing off his office to Dick Cheney, Bill Clinton says to George W. Bush, Sandy Berger says to Condi Rice, and Sandy Berger told me this right to my face. He said, "We told, all three of us told all three of them, your number one priority is going to be Osama bin Laden. We have been trying to get that guy. We thought we had him twice. We tried to assassinate him a couple of times. We have not been successful. You have to get him because he's coming after us." And in response to that, George W. Bush created a special commission, a special committee, to investigate and promote counterterrorism right out of the White House. And he put Dick Cheney in charge of it. And that committee never met before September of 2001. Dick Cheney had basically two jobs that George W. Bush had given him, other than the obvious job of being sure not to drink water while Bush is talking. Two jobs that Bush had given to him. Number one, be in charge of the counterterrorism task force. And number two, be in charge of the energy task force so you can come up with energy legislation. Cheney did a marvelous job with number two. No, I didn't mean that as a joke. Cheney did a marvelous job with the oil task force, as it were. In fact, we know that he did, because a right-wing think tank, a conservative think tank, sued him. Said, "You know, Mr. Cheney, this is Judicial Watch, Larry Klayman's organization, judicialwatch.org. You can see these documents over at their website. You can find them on our message board. Go to tomhartman.com and click on the message board blog." They said, "Mr. Cheney, we would like to know who you were meeting with and what you were doing in these private meetings." Sort of like the citizens of California, they were curious, why was Arnold Schwarzenegger meeting with Ken Lay in secret with a bunch of energy executives in Beverly Hills just before the blackouts that brought down Gray Davis? Well, that question's never been answered. Apparently Larry Klayman wasn't on it. But Larry Klayman with Judicial Watch, this right extreme conservative, the guy who initiated the lawsuit that led to the Paula Jones case, that led to discovering Monica Lewinsky, that led to the impeachment of Bill Clinton. This guy goes after Dick Cheney and says, what were you doing in those meetings? Dick Cheney, of course, his only public statement at the time.
Iraq sits on top of 10% of the world's oil reserves. Very significant reserve, second only to Saudi Arabia.
So he says, okay, well, what were you doing? And he sues. And in the initial stages of the lawsuit, they actually forced the release of a few documents. And as I said, you can see these documents over at the judicialwatch.org website or at tomhartman.com. Go to our message board, and they're posted there. And lo and behold, here we're having meetings. These guys are having meetings in March and April of 2001. Now, this is 6 months before 9/11. 6 months before 9/11. Dick Cheney, Ken Lay, and other unknown, as of this moment, members of the energy industry, of the oil industry, what is now the most profitable industry in the United States. Dick Cheney having meetings with these guys, and the documents that Judicial Watch was able to pry out of them, a map of Iraq with every oil field in the country. There's about 100 of them identified and named, and the 8 regions where oil had not yet been discovered because it hadn't been, nobody had done test wells or anything, identified and numbered. And then there was another page, whatever they were named. And then next to that, it said, you know, most probable country interested in buying this, France. What's the company? FINA. And this one, maybe the Chinese will want to buy. This one, the Russians will buy. This one, the Germans will buy. This one, ExxonMobil wants that one. These are the documents. These are public records. This is what Dick Cheney was doing in March and April of 2001, instead of looking for Osama bin Laden. So here you have the biggest intelligence.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Hey there, people, I'm Michael Brown.
Every person in that convention center, we just learned about that today.
So you're not telling me.
Those bodies that are there.
So you're not telling me you just learned that the folks at the convention center didn't have food and water until today, are you? You had no idea they were completely cut off?
The federal government did not even know about the convention center people until today.
You just found out about it today. Don't you guys watch television? Don't you guys listen to the radio?
No, they don't.
I'm George W. Bush, disrupting communications.
And I approve this mess.
Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job.
Brownie, you're doing a heck of a job.
The Beamer director's working.
Although, Blackie, quite frankly, I've seen you in better shape. Kill me,
Mark. George Bush ain't a gold digger.
I'm in need.
But he ain't fucking with no broke niggas.
I got a need.
Bush don't like
black people.
Katrina exposed serious problems in our response capability at the federal government. And the federal government didn't do its job. And I take responsibility for what went wrong. Are we incapable of dealing with a severe attack or another severe storm? And it's in our national interest that we find out exactly what went on and what went wrong.
Yeah, and it's not going to happen under the Bush administration. It is going to be, there's no doubt about it, there's going to be another whitewash here. George W. Bush says he's going to investigate himself. Sure enough, he's going to investigate himself. Jim in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Jim, what's up?
I listened to his speech, and he admitted that he was, you know, he would take the blame. So shouldn't there be an independent investigation right off the bat? Because what you have here is you have homes that are going to be built, and the people will have loans. But yet, we're building for nothing in Iraq.
Right.
You know, and then you have the convention center. I'm glad I heard you mention it. I watched Nancy Grace, and there was a doctor on her, said he eyewitnessed the rape of a six-year-old girl that was then murdered, while the National Guard locked herself in a meeting room and had vehicles blocking the doors. And in the same convention center, there was 30 to 40 bodies found on the second floor, some of them with their throat cuts, some of them with their arms in up, you know, against their faces like they were being attacked. And they said, no way that these people died a natural death. They were murdered. Now, we have to investigate all this stuff, and we're listening to news about saving dolphins.
Saving dolphins, what are you talking about?
Oh, didn't you hear about that? Off the coast down there, there was eight dolphins that was stuck in an aquarium.
Oh, yeah.
They went out to sea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, just because one story is there doesn't mean another story has to go away. But the reality is that this is a horrific event, and it didn't have to happen. If George Bush had been returning Catherine Blanco's phone calls, contrary to Limbaugh's lies and the Republican lies that are going around, that, saying...
It is flat-out absurd. Bush was begging that governor on the Sunday before the hurricane hit to get people out of there and to declare an emergency.
Yeah, not true. Sorry, simply
right.
Not true. And that's the right-wing spin that is going around. They are swift-boating Blanco. They are swift-boating Nagin. They are trying to turn this thing into those nasty Democrats did it. It's all the fault of the welfare state. When most of the people there, if they were African-American, yes, but that doesn't mean that they're automatically on welfare. Come on! But the right-wingers, in fact, the majority of these people down there, of the folks who were living in New Orleans, white, black, or otherwise, were employed. They just weren't employed. The majority of the poor people were not employed at the jobs that pay particularly well. But Jim, you make a good point.
Hey, Tom.
Yeah,
how about this? How about all the campaign funds they put a surcharge of 50% on and send it down there to help those people out?
Yeah, okay, that's an idea. Jim, here's the bottom line in my mind. Why is it that George W. Bush is coming on TV saying, send money to the Red Cross, armies of compassion, give money to private charities, when I'm paying my taxes, and you're paying your taxes, and anywhere between a third and a half of all our income is one way or another going to pay taxes, when you figure all the various taxes that get paid, and, you know, on down the road, and income tax and sales tax and everything else, you add it all up. And in fact, the middle class pays a higher percentage of their tax than millionaires and billionaires do, a much higher percentage. And the working poor pay a much higher percentage of their income as taxes than even do the middle class. Why is it, if we're paying all these tax dollars, and we can afford to have $300 billion to rebuild Iraq and to have a war in Iraq, and we can afford to give billions of dollars in foreign aid to foreign countries, and we can afford to have, you know, a hyper-military, and we can afford to have a strategic defense shield worth $1 trillion that hasn't even been demonstrated to work, a faith-based strategic defense, why is it that we have to turn to private charities to deal with Hurricane Katrina? I thought that's what we the people. I thought that's what governance, I thought that's what the commons was all about. Jeff in Seattle, Washington on the line. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Hey, this is Jeff Richardson. I'm the education director for America in Solidarity.
Uh-huh.
That's the group that has invited you to speak at our Iraq War and its Toll on Working Families event.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's October. Is it the 9th or the 19th? I always mix those up.
October 9th.
October 9th.
Seattle Town Hall.
In the Seattle Town Hall. Okay, how can people find out more information about that, Jeff?
Well, they can check out the website at www.americasolidarity.com. And if they want to get tickets, they can call 253-471-1123.
Good on you. Okay. Thank you, Jeff. Thanks for sharing
right.
that. And keep up the great work. Good talking to you. So the bottom line here, we have, again, the Bush administration and the cons within it trying to take an event, a national disaster, just as they did with 9/11, and use it, number one, to promote their con agenda. You're seeing them, you know, now's a good time to cut back on Medicaid. Now's a good time to do away with the estate tax. Now's a good time. We need more tax cuts to so-called stimulate the environment or the economy. Let's do away with environmental protections. Let's do away with workplace protections. Let's get rid of the Davis-Bacon Act and suspend prevailing wage laws. Yeah, you got all that. Plus, on top of that, you've got the right-wing talk machine out there reinventing George W. Bush as the hero of the day. Oh, he was begging that governor to take troops. No, I'm sorry, he was eating cake with John McCain. He was playing the guitar out in San Diego. He was clueless. He was clueless. He wasn't paying attention. Just like before 9/11. He was clueless. Or if he wasn't clueless, he was intentionally ignoring it. You can take either scenario, either one's pretty grim stuff. Thanks for being with us this week. We'll see you again next week. Thanks to David Poole and Louise for the work that they've done on the program. Folks in the chat room, we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.